Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie, joined by John. What's happening?
Dude, not a whole lot. I'm loving the weather.
You say today. Not a whole lot. There's a lot happening. There's a lot going on. It's a busy season, I think.
That's
true. We're coming upon a busy season. Yeah, the weather's been so much better. A little cooler today, which I actually prefer, but just came over here in a t-shirt and shorts. Not having to wear a hoodie or anything. Feels great.
I love it. It is a nice change from being 30 degrees below zero, right?
Frozen completely. Yeah. So I hope all of our listeners are starting to get a touch of better weather. I haven't heard a ton of awful things happening aside from the floods that happened once again in southeastern Kentucky, Tennessee, North Carolina, Virginia, where all those states converge. It's been a rough couple of years, but hoping they're getting the support they need. And we wish them well.
Definitely feel like an old man just sitting around and chatting about the weather. So I'm going to change gears a little bit.
And what are you going to do, Grandpa?
Well, I want to say thank you to Jeffrey over on Patreon, who joined us this week and came in at the $3 a month level, but took advantage of the annual membership. And I think he got like 10 or 15% off that. So yeah, Jeffrey, thank you. Also, Carrie came in a couple weeks ago. So thank you, Carrie, if we haven't already said thank you to you.
I also want to thank somebody for a new 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts. D. Coleman says, been listening to the podcast since the Rob Chalk episode with Chris Jericho. That was a long time ago. He says, I do have a case suggestion, the Heather Bogle case. So we will put Heather Bogle on our list. It could also be pronounced Boggle. We will find out when we Google it. But we will put that on our list. Thank you to D. Coleman for the review. That's a wonderful way to get us case suggestions. John, I don't know what you did to prepare for this case. I know there are some documentaries, there are some other podcasts about it, but I don't know how well you can actually prepare for the horribleness of what happens in this story.
It is so sad, man. So, so sad. We have kids that are the ages of the kids we're going to be talking about today. And it is brutal and it is disturbing. And it makes me pray that I never have to feel or experience what these people went through.
Like this gives me just strong vibes of so much evil and lack of remorse. And we'll get into the details of it, but it's a betrayal of epic proportions, I shall say.
All right, man. Well, with that being said, I expect both of us to be on our phones today when we're not speaking, because it's hard, man, but I'll get out of the way and let you get us rolling.
All right. We're going to be talking today about Skylar Annette Neese. She was born on February 6th of 1996 and described as a very loyal friend, which makes what happens to her later so much more painful. She was the only child of Mary and David Neese, who lived in Star City, West Virginia. That's not a city I'm familiar with, John, but know a lot about West Virginia. Mary was an administrative assistant at a cardiac lab, and David was a product assembler at Walmart. At 16, Skylar was a 4.0 student, hoping to one day become a criminal defense attorney. Thankful for people like that. In the evenings, she worked a part-time job at Wendy's, and she, like I said, great student, great friend, ambitious young lady. Everything seemed to be going great, obviously, until it doesn't.
Skylar met her best friend, whose name was Sheila Eddie, when she was just 8 years old. God, do you have friends that you met when you were that little? Like,
I don't. I wish I still did, but a lot of just,
well, I mean, I guess not necessarily
distance,
like friends now, but like, do you remember those friendships from when you were young? Like, those were like, I don't know. I was listening to a podcast this week where it was talking about your childhood friends, and like it said that even your best friends now as adults, like most of those you've met after you've grown up, right?
Right.
So it's like you guys might be best friends, but you've never sat on the back porch of your parents' house. You know, like you've never walked in the mountains when you were too young to drive. Like, I don't know, just stuff like that.
Yeah,
that,
it's there's an element of sharing life when you're young that doesn't happen as much when you're older. Yeah, absolutely.
Dave Neese said that she was like a part of our family. She was like one of our own kids. And good Lord, man, I mean, I have for kids like that, like my friends' kids feel like my kids. I totally get what he's saying. Sheila was born September 28th, 1995 in Blacksville, West Virginia. Her parents are Tara Klindemann and Greg Eddy. Sheila's parents divorced when she was just 5 years old after her father was in a car wreck, which caused a traumatic brain injury. Sheila met Skylar at a local children's activity camp. When Sheila's mom married in 2010, they moved to Morgantown, where Sheila and Skylar could go to university high school together.
Yeah, and you said it. I mean, not only were they friends when they were small, but they grew into young adulthood together. In their freshman year at University High School, they met another person who would become the third member of their group, and that was Rachel Shove. Rachel was born June 10th of 1996 to Rusty and Patricia. Until high school, Rachel had attended a Catholic school. By sophomore year, these three girls were practically inseparable. They spent almost all their free time together, talking, having general teenage fun, taking selfies, making videos, doing all the things that teenagers are into. But as it goes with teenagers, you know, they have their ups and downs. You have instances where you get mad at one person, there's some forgiveness, you move through it. It's interesting in a group of three, which I've seen over time working with youth, and at some point, if there is a long-term problem, one person chooses sides, which gets messy. But
I mean, I have a rule at my house that my kids can't have two friends over at one time, okay. Like especially for a sleepover type situation, because I feel like there's always drama and one kid gets left out, kids pair up. It's just a nightmare.
I like that a lot. Skylar tweeted on July 4th of 2012, "It really doesn't take much to piss me off. And sick of being at effing home. Thanks, quote unquote, friends. Love hanging out with you all too." So, you know, they're hanging out without her. They're hanging out without Skylar. Rachel and Sheila are spending time together. And exactly what you said, when two people pair off out of a group of three, it creates a lot of drama. The next day, Skylar would tweet, "You doing expletive like that is why I can never completely trust you." The next day, July 6th, 2012, Skylar Neese disappeared.
Man, like, I'm sure you've been through this, but like, I remember when I was a kid, like if there was drama, I don't know, I would either try to work it out or like boys would just kind of fist fight and then we would be friends
again. Move on. Yeah.
But I've learned as I'm raising kids that teenage girls are just different. Like it's different than when boys have drama.
Not only are teenage girls different, but communication is different. Like she's tweeting these things, which are probably not things that she would have walked up to them in the middle of the hallway at school and said. It's much easier to say things than it was when we were young. If you wanted to say something like this, you had to call somebody or go and see them face to face to say whatever you had. And that was more difficult.
Yeah. Something else I've learned the older I get and raising kids this age is like, as an adult, like stuff like this, if my friends did this to me, like, yeah, it would hurt, but it wouldn't ruin my life. Like that is life. That is their whole life. So yeah. This is a huge betrayal that just feels much more significant than it would to someone who's in their 40s. Right. But on the night of July 5th, 2012, Skylar came back to her family's apartment after she had worked her shift at Wendy's. And that's when she would leave the house. She would sneak out. The apartment complex's surveillance video showed Skylar snuck out the back window of her apartment at 12:30 a.m. on July 6th. That is something that terrifies me.
It is, me too. And I mean, I'm glad that they had surveillance video. That wasn't as common back then. Most homes, or a lot of homes at least, have it now. And I don't know, man. I have the way my house is laid out, a couple of my kids' rooms aren't super close to me. So it certainly is in the back of my head sometimes.
I'm going to get those really loud alarms. Like anytime someone touches a window or looks at the door, I want it to sound an alarm.
Looks at the door. Love it.
She was seen getting into the back seat of a light colored sedan that night. Skylar's dad said that she didn't take her cell phone charger, she didn't take her contact lens solution, and she left her window opened. So in his mind, this all pointed to the idea that Skylar was planning to leave and also planning on coming back. Sheila told the authorities that she and Skylar and Rachel were driving around and they were getting high that night. They drove around town getting high. And then they all dropped her off at the end of the road from the apartment building so that she could sneak back in. Sheila and her mom helped Skylar's parents canvass the neighborhood. They helped look for her car. Rachel had left for a Catholic summer camp for 2 weeks. While they searched, the pain was unbearable for Dave Neese. This is, again, her dad. And man, I tell you, I cannot imagine what that guy must have been going through.
And I don't want to. It's a pain that nobody should have to feel, and I don't think you can really understand it until it happens to you, and I hope it never does.
I never have to feel what Dave felt. He said, quote, "I was scared to death. I mean, I didn't know where my baby was, and it was terrible. It was horrible."
That is their only child. It was absolutely horrible. About 6 months after Skylar went missing, and weeks of questions from investigators who had questioned Sheila and Rachel pretty heavily. They were the last people to admit to seeing Skylar alive, and they were kind of under the microscope this whole time. But about 6 months in, Rachel had what is described as a nervous breakdown. Her mom called 911, and Rachel could be heard screaming in the background. She was taken to a psychiatric hospital for a 5-day stay. After she was released, she was asked to go directly to her attorney's office. And it was there that she confessed that she and Sheila had killed their friend, Skylar Neese. She gave this confession to investigators on January 3rd of 2013. Police would ask her, "Why did you do this?" And Rachel said, and this is part of the cold, evil piece that just runs all over me. She said, "We just didn't like her. We didn't want to be friends with her anymore. I've stopped being friends with people, John. Killing them was never an option. Blocking them on my phone and social media and not going to see them at their house or in public, all on the table."
I really don't understand how you could make such a leap from, "I hate you, I don't want to be around you anymore," to, "I think we should murder you." Like, how does such a young person get there?
No idea. And I mean, you know, somebody had to bring it up first, and then the other person's like, "Are you joking?" And then it just escalates is how it probably had to happen. But man, once you get there, I don't like to actually carry it out is a whole other kind of evil.
It terrifies me too, because I mean, I don't know in all my research that these kids ever had anything in their past that would indicate that they were even capable of doing something.
There's no violence that I recall, no aggression at all.
And I mean, I've got a kid right now who's in a situation where he's upset with some folks for betraying him, and they're upset with him. And I'm like, well, God, I hope it doesn't turn. Like, I was thinking worst case scenario is he's lost a friend.
Right.
But this is a new level. I mean, it could potentially end in him or someone else losing their life. And that is just off the rails crazy to me.
It really is.
After she confessed, Rachel took investigators to Skylar's body. On March 13th, 2013, the U.S. Attorney's Office issued a press release stating that a body had been found on January 16th and had been identified as the body of Skylar Neese. And she was just 30 miles away from her home. Skylar was found, Jamie, with over 50 stab wounds. This was not a quick death for her.
That's 50, not 15, 50.
Yeah, I mean, let's just pretend both girls participated. I mean, that's up to 25 each. Jamie, this is probably one of the most horrific and most intimate ways to murder someone other than absolutely choking. And so this just, 50 stab wounds tells you the amount of evil that each of the perpetrators had in their heart. According to court transcripts, Rachel said that she and Sheila picked Skylar up in Sheila's car. And in the trunk, the girls had cleaning rags, bleach, wet wipes, a shovel, a clean outfit for each of them to change into, which I think if you look up the definition of premeditation, it's see this case.
Yeah. And I mean, the only thing more suspicious than having it in your trunk is when you buy all that together at the store.
They each had knives and they were wrapped in towels tucked under their arms. They pulled up to Skylar's apartment at 12:30 a.m., like the surveillance shows. The girls then drove to a place called Brave, Pennsylvania, to a spot where the three would go smoke marijuana occasionally.
What a name for a place for two cowards to take somebody. Brave, Pennsylvania. Rachel said the girls got out of the car and they started chatting. Sheila and Rachel claimed that they had forgotten to bring a lighter, so Skylar said she would go to the car to get one. When she turned her back on her two best friends to go get something for them, that's when Sheila and Rachel counted to three and attacked. When we get back from the break, we'll dive further into this attack, talk about what happened at the scene, and then what happened with the investigation into Skylar's death. When they attacked, like pretty much anybody would, Skylar tried to run, but Rachel chased her down and tackled her and then continued to stab her. Sheila wasn't far behind. At some point, Skylar managed to get Rachel's knife and actually stabbed her right above her ankle. That's when Rachel said that she stopped attacking, but Sheila continued to stab at Skylar until her neck, quote, stopped making weird sounds, and all they heard was silence. Once they knew Skylar was dead, the girls tried to bury her body, but the ground was too hard and rocky for them to dig in. Instead, they covered the body with branches, dirt, and leaves. They went and changed their clothes, wiped themselves and the car down, and then they left the dead body of their best friend there in the woods in Brave, Pennsylvania.
Investigators made several attempts to get Sheila to incriminate herself, including having Rachel wear a wire and speak with her and say something on the recording that would implicate her, but this was unsuccessful. Eventually, they were able to get a search warrant for Sheila's house, which would include not only her house, but also a computer, a phone, her tablet, and then her car. And an FBI analysis of her car found Skylar's blood DNA in the trunk of Sheila's car. On May 1st, 2013, Sheila was arrested. She was arrested in a restaurant parking lot. Jamie, apparently her and her mom were eating inside the restaurant when authorities came to the restaurant and picked her up, loaded her in the car, and she even had the nerves to say, wait, you're going to do this in front of the restaurant? People can see this. People can see me getting in the car.
So and selfish.
The officer was like, absolutely, this is happening in front of the restaurant. And yes, people do see you. You murdered your friend.
If they didn't, I would take you to a restaurant just to do this.
That same day, Rachel would end up taking a plea deal. Both teenage girls would get charged with murder, and they would actually be tried as adults.
And here's the thing. Rachel knew where the body was, so there was no denying that she was involved. And I think Sheila felt like, you know what, she confessed, but as long as I stay strong, they're not going to be able to pin this on me. So as often happens, when two people decide to do something together and things get tough, they turned on each other. Rachel pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. Again, you mentioned it was premeditated, but this is part of her plea deal. They allowed her to plead guilty to second-degree murder by unlawfully, feloniously, willfully, maliciously, and intentionally causing the death of Skylar Neese by stabbing her and causing fatal injuries. On February 16th of 2014, Rachel received a sentence of 30 years in prison. However, she would be eligible for parole after 10 years. Sheila was indicted in front of a grand jury on September 6, 2013 on one count of kidnapping, one count of first-degree murder, and one count of conspiracy to commit murder, which I don't really understand. adding that in there, the conspiracy, like if I think you killed somebody, obviously you conspired. Isn't that implied in the first degree murder?
I would think so. I know every state just has different regulations and rules concerning what degrees. I mean, Kentucky doesn't even have degrees, right?
Right. So, yeah. It's just
who knows
murder.
But yeah, I think I agree with you. Like if you're guilty of first degree murder, that means you've conspired to do so.
Sheila would plead not guilty to all charges. She was set to stand trial on January 28th of 2014, but she was facing the prospect of additional charges from Pennsylvania, along with the charges from West Virginia, because that's where this body had happened. So she ended up changing her plea and didn't get as sweet of a deal as Rachel did, but changed her plea to guilty for the first degree murder charge. She would be sentenced to life in prison with mercy, which indicates that even though she's sentenced as an adult, West Virginia law requires a juvenile offender have the possibility of parole on a whole life sentence. Sheila is eligible for parole after 15 years from the time of sentencing.
During her sentencing, Rachel expressed remorse and apologized to Skylar's parents, her own family, and to God. That's, I mean, are you sorry because you got caught, or are you sorry because you did it? And I don't know that I have what I have needed to make
tough.
That call.
I mean, she did have, quote unquote, a nervous breakdown and then go confess to it, but I don't know, too little too late for me to give you any of my sympathy.
I don't know if a nervous breakdown can be determined to be caused from fear of consequences or guilt from what you did.
Yeah.
Investigators found her diary, and the day after Skylar's murder, Rachel wrote several pages about the Skylar situation and asked for forgiveness for what happened that night and for, quote unquote, all these lies. So, you know, perhaps there was remorse and guilt. She, however, has never publicly expressed any remorse. A former guidance counselor at their high school said, "Nobody wins. Skylar isn't around. The two girls are in jail. The two girls' parents are living through this, and Morgantown is still ripped apart because of this situation."
Destroyed three entire families in this one act when they intended to just get rid of their friend, or at least that's what they said at first. Just 2 years ago, in May of 2023, Rachel got her first parole hearing. Remember, she was eligible after being in prison for 10 years. It was at that time that she finally admitted the real motive for killing Skylar. Rachel said that she and Sheila were in a romantic relationship, and this caused tension between the two and their friend Skylar. This was always a theory. There were some diary entries from Skylar in 2011 saying that she had been in a sleepover at Rachel's house and the three had been drinking. And then she saw her two best friends, who she had no idea were attracted to each other, get intimate with each other during the night. Skylar had to stay in that room because if she had left, Rachel's mom would have found her and said, "Hey, what are you doing? Where are you going?" You know, you can't alert the parents when something that you don't want to be caught doing, like drinking, is happening in there. Rachel claims they were afraid that Skylar would tell people that they were in a lesbian relationship. Skylar's parents didn't believe this, though. Her mom said she had a lot of gay and lesbian friends. It didn't bother her. She wouldn't have told anyone. Officer Jessica Colbank of the Star City Police Department said that she thinks the girls killed Skylar just for the thrill of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that you have the evidence to say that either, but I mean, it does make sense to me that if they were doing something that those around them would see as not okay, and again, they lived in a pretty small town in rural America, so probably wasn't highly favored upon to be in a same-sex relationship in
right.
that part of town with that culture, but still, I would think that that would be better than murder, but...
You'd think.
But who knows? At the parole hearing, Rachel also claimed that she and Sheila immediately regretted what they did. She said that they both cried and vomited after what happened, but Sheila hadn't shown any remorse to anyone for the killing. In 2023, so just a couple of years ago, Rachel was denied parole, and she was up for consideration again in July of 2024. Skylar's parents were there again via telephone for this hearing. Dave Neese was concerned Rachel would get parole, so he gave the family impact statement. Jamie, do you want to read this statement?
Yeah, in a prepared statement, he said, "Inmate Shelf," referring to Rachel, of course, "thus far has shown herself, has proven to be both a narcissist and liar attempting to manipulate the system in which she resides. It has been proven without any uncertainty that she cannot follow the ordinances and statutes within the maximum security prison in which she has been ordered by her judicial system to be confined to. Her insubordination and deluded belief that she can scheme her way out of any situation is why we find ourselves at this place today. She and her accomplice planned my only child's vicious murder for upwards of a year. A year! They gave this evil monstrosity almost 365 days to change her mind, almost 52 weeks to say no to this murderous attack, almost 8,760 hours in which to realize that this decision to take another's life was irrational, and almost 525,600 minutes to save my beloved daughter's life. But instead, she made the choice to murder my Skylar."
That is awful that this man has to feel those things and think those things and do those calculations, but he is 100% right. So he posed this question to the parole board. He said, "If she slaughtered someone she called a friend, can you imagine what she would do to her enemies?" And he's absolutely right. She is full of evil, I guess. And we'll talk more about it later, but what is the appropriate end for her time? Is it until she's dead, or is it, you know, is there a time in which you feel like she could be let out? We'll talk more about that later.
Yeah, I mean, she's almost 30 at this point. She did have an opportunity at that hearing to speak for herself. She said while she's been in prison, she's gotten a bachelor's degree in communication and a cosmetology certificate.
That would piss me off to hear that as Skylar's dad, because I would just want to say my daughter never got the chance to do either of those things.
Yeah. So it's almost like she's bragging.
I don't care what you did in prison.
That's the message that the family receives. She's trying to say that she's been responsible, but obviously she's doing a lot of things that Skylar wanted to do. She said that she leads an inmate prayer group, participates in a prison drama club, and believes that she has matured since she was 16 and is ready to be a productive member of society. She had, however, received a write-up for an undisclosed reason since her previous parole hearing. It was revealed to the board, just undisclosed to us. She also did not have a very clear home plan for where she would go, where she would live, and what she would do if she was released. After 10 minutes of deliberation, which I think is 9 minutes more than I needed, the board decided not to grant Rachel parole at that hearing. They told her next time she needed to have zero write-ups and a better plan for where she would go when released. That next hearing could happen as soon as June, 2025. Dave Neese continues to be afraid his daughter's killers could go free. He calls the girls dangerous animals who belong in cages. He also said, "Skylar didn't get any second chances. Why should they? Sheila won't have her first parole hearing until 2028, so there's still time to consider her and her role. She remains at the Lakin Correctional Center, the same place that Rachel is being held, which I guess makes sense geographically, but I wonder kind of what drama that may have caused in the prison."
Skylar's parents have been determined to use this awful loss and the experience to help others, along with creating a memorial in the woods where Skylar's body was found. They pushed for policy change. One problem with this investigation is that authorities initially considered Skylar to be a runaway. They had video footage of her sneaking out of her house and getting into a car with somebody else, so they didn't think this was something that, you know, there was no foul play involved. She's being a teenager who's running away. And so that did not give police the time needed to file an Amber Alert, to make an Amber Alert, because that required her to be missing for up to 48 hours. At that time, an Amber Alert was only considered if a child met one of four criteria, or actually all of the criteria. Number one is a child believed to have been abducted. Number two, the child is under 18. Number three, the child may be in danger of death or serious injury. And four, there is significant information to indicate the Amber Alert would be helpful. After Skylar's story was shared, a West Virginia state legislature from Skylar's home district introduced a bill called Skylar's Law to change the Amber Alert plan to issue immediate public announcements when any child is reported missing and in danger, regardless of whether or not the child is believed to have been kidnapped. And that bill was signed into law in May of 2013. I don't know that the Amber Alert would have saved Skylar's life, but I do think that this is a legislation that could potentially have already saved lives and could in the future. So I'm really glad that a state legislature felt the need to present that. And at least that is some glimpse of light in this very dark case.
Yeah, I like it. I'm generally an abundance of caution kind of guy. That's how I live my life, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. But I do like that change to the law and think it should be done so nationally if possible. But you're also right. I don't think it would have made a difference here. Perhaps, an Amber Alert going out, maybe looking for their car. I mean, they know where to find Sheila and Rachel. So, and they found them. So they went directly to where they needed to go once they were able to get this reported. And Skylar was already dead by that time. So it's not going to save her life, but kudos to her parents for trying to make a positive out of such an awful thing that happened to them. And now's the hard conversation, John. We this comes up every now and then, and I feel like so much of it depends on the circumstances, but minors being sentenced, should they be sentenced for the rest of their lives? Should they get a minimum sentence? And what do you think about Rachel's deal?
Man, it's so tough. It is so tough. I mean, there are so many contributing factors that would make a young person kill somebody, you know? Like, was there trauma involved? Was she just a kid who made a very, very bad decision? Regardless, there are so many people who experience trauma that don't murder people. At some point, you have to be held accountable for your actions. So, man, it's tough. If my 16-year-old murdered someone, I, as his parent, would hope that he would learn his lesson, and after 10, 20, 30 years in prison, he would be safe to be out and try to get a second chance on life. But like Dave said, his daughter doesn't get a second chance. So why should she? So,
and I mean, we obviously have spent a lot of time talking about the Lily Lid murders, and we did a whole series called Paradigm on that, super deep dive into the murders of the Lily Lid family and the individuals that were imprisoned because of it. And we've advocated for a couple of those who were teenagers at the time to be released because their role in that crime appeared to be fairly passive. They were almost victims and witnesses as opposed to perpetrators. But we know that both Sheila and Rachel physically participated in the murder of Skylar. So I'm a little bit less sympathetic to them than I would be Karen Howell and Crystal Sturgill in the Lily Lid murders case, but I still feel like there were 16. I would not object if Rachel were paroled. I think let's go 20 years. Let's let them be, well, like your brain at this point is developing later and later. It used to be done by 25. Now we're showing scientifically that the brain is developing. People are maturing a little later. So let's get her well past that point. She is currently about to turn 29, so she's right at 30 years old. Let's give her another 7 or 8 years, is my opinion. And I don't know that, like, she got that sentence, the lesser sentence, because she was the first one to take the deal, which I'm sure is why she took it. But I don't know that Sheila's should be any worse since she didn't come forward and confess. Maybe it should. I don't know. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, Jamie, I mean, at the end of the day, I think they're both responsible, whether whoever comes, you know, comes first to admit it or not. I think they're both responsible. Even if one person was the ringleader, right? The person who was the person leading the operation or kind of spearheaded it.
And they're usually
the other
one is
guilty
always.
By association. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm like you. If she was paroled, I don't think it's I'm okay with it. I think that she should be on probation for a long time so that there's someone checking in on her.
Yep.
Someone checking in with those around her to make sure she's doing okay. And at the first sign that she's broken any part of her probation, she's back and it's done.
Absolutely. Make it a situation where if she is still a danger to society, that don't give her the opportunity to do so. And it's just so impossible to tell whether they still are or not at this point with a crime like this that was so very personal. But like we said, they kept their mouths shut for months and lived with this. And you can, if you go and watch the documentary, you can hear more in-depth things about the murder itself and who did what. We don't love sharing necessarily the gory details. We actually went a little gorier than normal today. But you can find out more about those details. And the more I listen to and the more I watch about this case, the more I believe that they should stay in prison for a long, long, long time.
Absolutely. And I'm fine with that.
Guys, we really appreciate you hanging out with us. This is a case that has been fascinating to me for quite some time. So I'm excited we finally got to share it with you all. We are adding cases to the list every day. So send those in the form of a 5-star review. You can find us on email, truecrimecast@gmail.com, or on any social media platform at truecrimecast, and we'll add those cases to the list.
Guys, we really appreciate you sticking around and listening to these stories that we tell. Jamie, like Jamie said, a 5-star review would help so much. So we really appreciate that in advance.
We will be back next week with another interesting case as always. And don't forget about our True Crime To Go's. If you're subscribed to us, you'll catch those. So make sure you don't miss them.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.